This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
9:03 on this Saturday morning. Time now for Sports Saturday, brought to you by Prairie Farms Dairy in Carlinville. Taste the homemade goodness of Prairie Farms. By Mark Steeren, your State Farm Insurance agent in Litchfield. Kurt's 24-hour heavy and light-duty towing in Litchfield. By DC Waste and Recycling in Hillsboro. Bruce Webb Insurance in Farmersville and Raymond. By Nancy's Pizza in Litchfield. The Huff and Sons Funeral Homes in Hillsboro, Raymond, and Farmersville. By CTI Tech, bringing 1-gig internet to Hillsboro and beyond. Hillsboro Area Hospital, your front door to a world of healthcare. And by Garrell's Auto Body and Repair in Litchfield. And on this Saturday morning, we join WSMI's Tim Mize.
David Jenkins, thank you very much. And we got a room full of Smiths with us this morning on Sports Saturday. Dan, Jeremy, and Michelle, thank you so much for coming in. And we got a lot to talk about with you today. Of course, Michelle's the softball coach, high school and soon to be junior high for Gillespie. Jeremy, of course, the baseball coach at Gillespie and one of the great young officials we have. And Dano's been doing it for a time or two. Guys, pull those microphones a little bit closer to you. And Dan, how many years have you been officiating now?
This will be 32.
32.
Yeah.
Does it seem like that many?
It's starting to.
And then, Jeremy, for you, how long you been doing it?
18.
Eight. But you're only like 25. How can you be officiating for 18 years?
Right. I wish.
And then, Michelle, you've been the softball coach now at Gillespie a lot longer than it seems like to me anyway.
Yeah, pretty close to 15 years that I've been there. Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah, flew by.
It flies by when you're having fun, they say.
Right, yeah, they say that.
So we're going to talk about officiating. We're going to talk about coaching, but we do have to start the morning on a very sad note. The son of Pena football coach Trevor Higgins, Evan, was found in a swimming pool yesterday, unresponsive, and they administered CPR. He's been taken to emergency facilities up in Springfield, but apparently the next 24 to 48 hours will be critical for young Evan. So just keep the family in your prayers there. That's just devastating news. And Jeremy, Michelle, you've got young children, and when something like this happens, it puts sports in context real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, in the conference, we see each other a lot, and the coaches, and we form relationships with them. So we don't know the Higgins family well, but our prayers go out to them because that's, you know, we all have kids, and in any moment it could happen. And so we're just grateful that we have a healthy daughter, and our prayers go out to them because that's a sad time for them. So,
yeah, so keep the Higgins family in your prayers here this morning, young Evan. And, you know, about sports and context, we all get riled up. You know, you guys are officials, so you're bums. You don't know nothing about anything. And, you know, coaches are idiots. My kid's an all-star, this and that. But when real life happens, it really should make us all kind of recalibrate and refocus what priorities are. But that one of the great things about sports is that it is a family. And Jeremy and Michelle, coaching the teams that you do, it does become a family because you spend so much time with these kids.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we're spending more time, you know, with their kids than we do ours at times throughout the season. Him and I, you know, we both love what we do, so, it makes it worth it for us if we can impact their lives. But not everybody understands, you know, the commitment. Some people wonder, why do you spend so much time, you know, coaching or away from your family? But, you know, for us, it's, you know, it's part of us. It's part of our family. And it's just, you know, we wouldn't be happy probably not doing it. So, and our daughter loves the sport as well. She's starting to get into it. So that's fun to see. So, you know, it's just kind of part of our lives.
And Jeremy, you have such a unique relationship because you see a lot of these kids as an official in the winter on the basketball floor. And then come springtime, you're coaching the Gillespie kids. And then you see the kids that you've officiated in the winter across the other side of the diamond. And it's a very unique relationship. You don't see a lot of people that have that combination.
Right. And it's funny sometimes when you're on the baseball field and the kid kind of does a double take and doesn't realize who you are. And then it's like, oh, I said something to you in a basketball game. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. No big deal. You know, just move on and play the game. So it's fun.
And you guys had quite the baseball season this year. And, you know, any regional championship is nice. But I just wonder if the regional championship you're not expected to win, it's a little sweeter.
And everything just kind of fell into place that last week. You know, Ston had the problems with their field, needed to move it. Luckily, ours was playable. And I kind of told the guys after we beat Ston on that Friday, I said, the stars are aligning. You might as well just win it tomorrow and go take your chances at T-Town. So, and we did. Hit the ball well those last two games. So it was exciting.
This was a brutal year for the spring sports with the rain and all the different field work. And, Jeremy, I don't know how many hours you spend getting that baseball field ready, but it's a lot.
It's tiresome. And luckily I got, and Michelle too, you know, we got assistance, my dad, Adam Tallman, who are available to go out there, and Joe Kelly from Michelle, to get the fields ready when we're in class, you know. So it's always nice to have those groundskeepers to do things like that.
You go through a lot of diamond drive on that baseball field.
Sometimes, yeah. And it's always funny because I go out to lunch or on my plan period for a few minutes, and Dad and Tallman are out there, and Dad, not going to play today. No way. Not going to happen. Adam's like, just trust the process. It's fine. We're good. So it's always a fun argument to have.
And Michelle, I don't know how in the world Joe Kelly got that softball diamond ready for some of those regional games. I know there was literally standing water on the field in the morning and playing softball by the afternoon.
Yeah, he's, you know, been on that field and multiple fields for a lot of years taking care of it, and as long as I've been there. And Jim Matisse has been a big help, too. He's out there, too. Those two can tell me exactly, like, yes or no, and they definitely know what they're doing. They've seen it enough at this point. We've been lucky with the new field out behind the elementary school that it dries very well, it drains well. So we've been lucky that we've gotten a lot of games in. But, yeah, that one was pretty amazing. They did a lot of work. I had a parent come out and help that day, too, just because we, you know, wanted to get that playoff game in. But, you know, some diamond dry was used that day for sure. But the sun makes a huge difference. And with our field being in that open area, the wind helps a lot, too. So, but those guys, yes, they are amazing. Joe and I were out there yesterday. We just got some dirt added and spent about 3 or 4 hours out there, you know, working on it before middle school season starts. So, yeah, it's a maintenance process, but, you know, it's kind of like if you enjoy being in your yard and planting flowers, it's the same scenario. Joe's pretty at home out there, and I remember one year at Easter, I said, what are you doing out here? It's Sunday, you know, go hang out with your family at Easter. And he's like, God knows where I need to be. So, so that's, you know, that's sort of his sanctuary.
And it's such a beautiful field. As I think about it, though, there's only one thing they probably should have changed. They should have put some sort of ball return on the roof of the school, because there is a lot of softball stuck up there.
Yeah. The way it's situated in there, it's we get a lot of foul balls up there. I always worry it's going to break one of those solar panels, but so far we've been lucky. But, yeah, luckily one of the janitors has to go up and retrieve some before it rains or whatever. But, yeah, I think eventually we'll probably put some kind of netting or something else up higher. We did change the backstop a little bit within that first year. It helped a little bit, but there's still, you know, quite a few. But I guess it's better than losing them in a cornfield and not
much
getting
better.
Them back. So
I was thinking of like some sort of like skee ball return system where it could just roll down the roof, go into a hole, and then funnel right back out towards the field.
Yeah, maybe we should have the engineering class work on that this
That's
this,
right.
This
Give
year.
Them something to do.
Right.
Talking with Jeremy and Michelle Smith and Dan Smith, all joining us here on Sports Saturday. And you asked when you came in if it was kind of getting back to normal with the passing of Terry, and, you know, I told you, and there's just kind of a new normal in the building now without Terry. You know, he's been gone a couple of months. It doesn't seem like that is possible. But I know all three of you had a very unique and special relationship with Terry. And I guess, Dan, for you, you know, you knew what Terry was going through. You've had cancer. You're thankfully in remission right now. And I told you before we went on the air, I've come to realize that there's two types of people in this world, those who have had cancer and those who haven't. And I know when Terry got his diagnosis, you were one of the people that reached out to him pretty quickly.
Sure. He came over and did one of our baseball games, and it seems like he always enjoyed coming over, and we enjoyed having him.
He loved Gillespie.
And I talked to him about how he was doing, and after his first surgery in, I think, Cincinnati, you know, he seemed like he was doing well and stuff. And then when it came back this next time, and, you know, and we talked, and, you know, you just do what you got to do. And, you know, you go through it, and sometimes it's in a bad spot, and it's not good. But Terry was just, to coaches, to referees, I mean, kids, that's what it was all about. And we're thankful we had him for all the stuff. And now you're doing it, and you're going to be just like him because you're there for the kids. You enjoy the sports. And you were talking earlier about the camaraderie, Michelle said, about coaching. Referees, coaches, it's like, you know, somebody will say, oh, Dan, you going to keep refereeing? I said, yeah, I enjoy it. It's all these guys. And Kimbrough's going to give it up. Are you kidding me?
Right. How about that?
You know, I mean, these guys are, you know, they might holler and scream at us as referees, but we became friends, all of us, all over the years. So, I mean, it's just a fraternity, I guess.
And, you know, Terry, he taught me so many things, too much to even list, basically just everything I knew, I guess, to put it into a few words. But I know one of the things that he always drove home, and it really stuck with me, was, officials don't lose ball games. You know, inevitably, when we walk out of a game, you know, we're walking out of the gym, we have people come up, oh, XY official cost us this, they cost us the game. And Terry's response was always the same. How many free throws did you miss?
Yeah.
How many turnovers did you have? Oh, you missed some free throws and had some turnovers? Guess what? And then he would tell you know, you turn the ball over 12 times, that's 24 points.
Yeah.
Right there. So, you know, it's easy to blame officials, but it still comes down to playing the game. And I know from an official standpoint that officials around the area really appreciated Terry's approach to that part of the game. He was never on the air hooting and hollering about officiating.
We'd be officiating somewhere, and as soon as we got in the car to come home, I'm flipping to WSMI for the tape delay game that Terry's probably doing, and I enjoyed listening to him call the game. I might not have been there, but I knew what was going on.
Felt like you were there.
And he was just great, you know.
Jeremy, I know you had it set up this year for one of your games. Terry, we were going to broadcast the game, and Terry was going to come and throw out the first pitch. I think it got rained out, unfortunately, so it wasn't able to happen. But I know he always loved that Gillespie baseball field. The stories he would tell about old Sammy Stewart from back in the day. But he always loved the Gillespie baseball facility. Great place to call a ball game.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the thing he liked the most is you're inside. You're out of the elements.
He liked that.
You don't have to worry about getting rained on.
Yes.
You know, so.
He broadcast a number of games from, like, the backseat of a car. Just because, you know, I'm not getting wet.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They don't pay me enough to get electrocuted. Like, if it starts raining, I'm going home. I'm out of here.
I think you were pretty close to that at our field this year, right?
You guys had a big tent set up, though. That was very nice. But, yeah, like, I love to do the games, but not at the sake of electricity.
Yeah.
Right.
No,
you know?
No.
Yeah. I want to take that chance.
We need to get to a break here on Sports Saturday. We will come back with a lot more with the Smiths following these messages on Sports Saturday.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize.
All right, David Jenkins, thank you so much. We're joined in the studio by Dan, Jeremy, and Michelle Smith here on Sports Saturday. And I want to talk a little bit about officiating kind of overall, and then we'll get into some more specific things about maybe some rule changes for the upcoming year. But I know last year in the 3A Super Sectional, between Southeast and East St. Louis, there were a few incidents, we will call them, and people were up in arms. A good example of officials cost us the game. No, they didn't. Never mind the turnover that you had with 10 seconds to go. Forget about that. It's the officials' fault. But the incident was East St. Louis had six players on the floor. And so I just want to kind of talk about the mechanics of an official and all the different things you have to watch, because I remember this past year at the Carlinville Holiday Tournament and the championship game between Calhoun and Hillsborough, we had that exact same situation where come out of a timeout, and then all of a sudden, Hillsborough's shooting free throws. I'm like, what in the world is going on? Calhoun had six guys on the floor. The officials saw it. Technical foul, obviously. And on we go. So, Dan and Jeremy, if you could just kind of talk about that responsibility from an officiating perspective, who's watching that? Is one official on it as a specific job, or just any of the 1-3 on the floor supposed to be watching that? How's that work?
Well, the official administering the ball is going to throw the ball in. The other two officials are on the little block on a full timeout. They got one team, and the other guy's got the other team. When the signal comes to come out and play, you count your team, got five players, and he counts his team's got five players. It's an unwritten rule that my crew does and most all the other officials should do is the guy administering. First off, Jeremy would give me the thumbs up or five. I got five. The other guy tells you five. That's not going to get it, though. With me throwing the ball in, I'm counting both teams. Now, in that situation that they had Southeast and East St. Louis, those three officials are outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
They had fan issues. The place was jam-packed. I'm going to be honest, they were not probably, I know, I've talked to them afterwards, later, they never realized what was going on, the Southeast fans going crazy, they were going off the floor. First off, trying to get off the floor alive.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Because both sides, it was a madhouse.
Yeah.
Did they make a mistake? Yes, they did. But it could happen to any of us. But that's how you're supposed to handle it. If they catch it, first off, if I catch it before we put the ball in play, boom, hey, you got one too many. Don't create a problem.
Right.
But if you don't catch it until you've put the ball in play and now you've made a mistake, but it's a technical foul, two shots and the ball out of bounds for Southeast is the way it should. But it was just one of those things,
And when a game is, because nothing happens in a vacuum, when you get in a late postseason environment like that, there's so many different things going on. And I just know from my youth officiating, back in the day, as a 12-year-old, umpiring baseball, it's easy to get caught up in the game.
Yes.
It's a good ball game and you're still a human being. So, you're in the flow of the game and the next thing you realize, oh, I guess we got a problem here.
Or what just happened.
Yeah, right. And despite what, fans might think, officials don't have a rooting interest.
No.
Like, Jeremy, you've been doing this 18 years now, and you're one of the great. We always talk about the need for young officials. You're one of the best, if not the best, young official we have in the IHSA right now. And I know I've had several coaches over the course of the last couple of years, say, who's doing the game tonight? And I'll say, I'm not sure. And then they see you walk into the gym like, oh, good. Oh, good. So, Jeremy's here.
Some of them may say that. And then they see who I bring with me, and then they're like, oh, there we go.
But when you're a young official, experience-wise, you're not a young official. So when you first get in to officiating, those first couple years, I'm sure it's different dealing with all of the theatrics outside the game. The game itself between the lines is always the same, but all the stuff you deal with as a varsity official, I'm sure it takes time to adjust to.
Well, especially for me, because I was typically younger. Well, I'm younger than 95% of the head coaches.
Right.
So they're trying, not to try to intimidate you, but they're always trying to get what they can out of you. But luckily I've worked with, Dad Rick, Fess, and before that, Todd and Mark. So I've always had protection, quote unquote, mm-hmm. to help me get through those situations where I wasn't used to. So.
And that group of officials right there that you just named, that's about as good as it's going to get. We got a lot of great officials around here. The POA boys are fantastic. Your guys' crew is fantastic. And it has to be reassuring to you guys when you're with a crew like that, knowing There's not a weak link here.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And the guys we work with, there really is no weak link, I don't think. Even when we have to pick up somebody to go to fill in as a third, you know, we never feel weakened, per se, as a crew.
If you know your partners, you let them do their job. They call their area. The coaches might not like what I'm going to say, but there's three guys. You have an area. And Kimbrough's hollering at me, why didn't you call that? I'm not looking over there.
Right.
Okay? And we go around now, me, Rick, Fess, and even Jeremy's been doing it so long now and working into the postseason. There's not a coach that don't know us. I mean, we work the same schools, you know, you name it, we go there, and they know us. And I think they trust us. Not, and that goes the same thing with Denny Held and the old veterans that's been doing it forever. When they walk in the gym, they go, oh, okay, we're good. The coach knows that, hey, we're going to get a fairly called game, you know. So, you know, it's just easier, you know, people that you're working with and goes back to the camaraderie, and we know what they're going to do. And
I can't remember how long it's been since it's been a three-man crew at the varsity level. Jeremy, did you ever get involved in a two-man crew?
No.
Has it been three-man your whole time?
Three-man for the most, yeah, almost the whole time.
So my question to Dan would then be, does the three-man crew, is it beneficial, or does it, I'm sure there's some pros and I'm sure there's some cons, but is it a situation where sometimes if there's three officials on the floor, maybe you don't see something that you would have seen if there was just a two-man crew?
No, I don't think so. It's just, when I started in the two-man day, you know, my first varsity game was from Coach Lofka at mm-hmm. Bunker Hill, and I was doing a freshman game and happened to be with Rick Toll. Didn't know who he was, but you just went and worked with whoever then, and then Coach Lofka gave us, hey, you guys work pretty good to get whatever. But we didn't know any different when you was doing two-man. Same thing with Denny Held and Johnny Fall and those guys. They were partners. They called, you know, you had to try to look more bigger area. Mm-hmm. You had a bigger area. But with three-man, you got a certain area that you watch. And what it was supposed to do is take care of the off-ball contact. And it does if it's worked right, you know. So I would say, no, I don't see any way that two-man would be better than three-man. And if we go see, maybe go watch Gillespie play a junior high game and you got two guys out there, and it's just like, oh, my God. We go to warm up for varsity. We do about three junior high games in the area, and we take three. So yeah. We don't care about the extra paycheck. Just pay us a normal for two. We want to do three-man. Plus, I'm getting older, and I can't do two-man. I don't want to do two-man, you know.
A lot more running.
Yes, yes. So,
and Dan, it's so great to have you back on the floor, because when you first got diagnosed with your cancer, you were obviously not able to officiate. And I know that pained you, but I would still see you at the game. So you kept yourself in the gym.
Yeah. I had a stem cell transplant in October of 2016, and I lost 45 pounds, and I didn't go to a game, I think, might have been Christmas time or in January because I was so weak. But I remember going to Carlinville. I don't know if it was Jeremy and Rick and Fess or who was doing the game, but I went, and they had to get me a folding chair at the end. But I missed it.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets in your refereeing. You think we're going out there to be hollered at and screamed at?
You're not?
No.
Oh.
Do you think it's for the money? No, that ain't getting it either. But, you know, I started when I was 27. I played all three sports in high school, and then I couldn't play no more to give back. And I enjoy the kids. And now, you know, when I do give it up in three or four years when Jeremy makes it to state, you know, I'm going to miss it.
Is that what you're waiting for?
Yeah. I mean, we want him to have a good guys to work with.
Yeah.
But he's done two sectional finals in a row. And
so I think the way that works, right, you'll get a super most likely.
Well, in the
next
year
or so.
Yeah.
And then
that's on your way, you know.
Yeah. I've had people tell me before, these officials need to get graded. This is ridiculous. And I say, they do.
They do.
They do. And like that, you know, that's something that people might not realize, Jeremy, is you guys do, you are held accountable for the calls that you make.
Yeah. Even in baseball and softball, Michelle and I have to rate the umpires and basketball the same way. You know, it's a 1 to 5 type of system. 5 is the worst. But if you give them a 5, you have to write up a report as to why.
I'd say very rarely do we have that issue. It's we do have a lot of good softball officials in the area as well. You get used to a certain group of guys that you say you, mm-hmm. that you walk up and they walk up and you're like, great, awesome. You know, it just takes one less thing that you have to concern yourself with, which you really shouldn't, I guess. But every once in a while you have a situation that's unfortunate.
Baseball and softball are different because the strike zone is subjective. You know, in basketball and football, the calls are the calls. But in baseball and softball, some umpires got a big zone, some umpires got a small zone, high, low, whatever. And that's something you have to adjust to as a player. You can't get caught up in, well, that wasn't a strike. Of course it was a strike. They called it a strike.
Right. Especially we try to preach with our kids when you might not like it, but when you got 2 strikes on you, and then you better be swinging or if it's close, because don't let them determine that. You determine that, you know, and get another chance if you need to foul it off. But, you know, they don't control the game either. I mean, it's us. We have to make the plays and you have to, you know, put the ball in play. And if you make errors, then that's on you too. But sometimes, you know, the momentum, I think, switches a little bit, you know. But it does if they have a small strike zone. It definitely is something the pitchers have to adjust to as well. But, you know, it's part of the game.
Terry had a Mack truck strike zone. That's how he always phrased it. He always say, I wasn't good, but I was on time.
Yeah.
He was a very good umpire, but he had a big zone. And the kids playing in the game knew. He had a big zone. If you set up 4 inches off the outside corner and hit that mitt, he's going to call it a strike because we're here to swing the bats. Yeah. And, you know, especially at the major league level now, there's not enough swinging of the bats. Too much looking for walks, and the strike zone is too small until the games take too long. And, Jeremy, you know this. The kids will adjust. I mean, if they see, okay, he's calling that pitch off the outside corner, a strike. If I'm the pitcher, I'm going back out there. And if I'm the hitter, I better foul it off.
Well, I think that, you know, is the difference between a good ball player and an average ball player. Mm-hmm. Can you make that adjustment, you know, game to game or even sometimes at bat to at bat, depending on what kind of umpire you got behind the plate? So.
Yeah, I always like an aggressive athlete. I mean, you know, someone who wants to make contact or in our case, but I'd rather them go out swinging every time I won't say a word than watching that third strike. And it's, you know, there's memes out there and jokes out there about what your face looks like when your daughter takes that third strike. So I guess if ours learns anything, I hope it's that she goes out swinging. But, you know, there's a lot of life lessons in all of that. You just, you know, sometimes you got to be aggressive and sometimes you have to know when to adjust. So,
do you know Shine Sarek from old time umpire? I mean, he was old. He was an older umpire when we were in high school.
Okay.
And his favorite saying is, you don't walk to the majors, you know, so go up there looking to swing. And
he used to say he'd do the little kids in the summer even. And he said, you know, to the coaches, which he knew, you know, local coaches, is you want a fast game or you want a slow game? You know, like, okay, he's going to call everything, you know, or whatever. The thing I helped Jeremy and, kids today are a lot of the kids, you know, they come back and they're complaining. They just struck out with their bat on their shoulder. And I want to say, I try to keep my mouth shut, but say, did the umpire call it a strike? You know,
that's all that matters.
But so it must have been a strike. You know, it was close enough. You got 2 strikes. And like Michelle's, you teach kids when 7 years old, if you got 2 strikes, if it's close, you better be swinging.
Better protect.
And I don't care if you strike out, take a cut. Okay, you know.
So. I helped coach my nephew's Little League baseball team, 10 years old, and that was our big thing this year. I don't want you striking out looking. Yeah. Like, if you strike out swinging, I'm gonna clap for you and tell you a way to go down swinging. Good job. But don't go down looking. And certainly don't go down looking and say, well, it wasn't a strike.
Right.
Well, he called it a strike. If he calls it a strike, it's a strike. If they call it a foul, it's a foul. Like, you know, you got to deal with it and move on. And we see so much, and it's not hard to see why nobody wants to be an official anymore. Did you guys see that video? I think it was from Colorado a month ago with the full on fight. You got the adults out there in a fist fight because a 13-year-old umpire made a call they didn't like in a 7-year-old game. I mean, that is, it's beyond the pale of ridiculousness that something like that would happen. But when you see that, if you're, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, and you were thinking about, maybe I want to be an official. After you see that, why would you want to do it?
Yeah,
and I mean, if you look around the area, there's very few young officials, especially in softball. And I think, you know, I think there unfortunately are people that don't want to put themselves in that situation of scrutiny. Yeah. It's unfortunate because we need good officials, you know, to, you know, fill the schedule. You know, we're trying to fill our schedules, and the same guy can't do every game all over the area.
Baseball and softball, because of the time, it's really the only sport where it happens. But sometimes players are ready to go. Us broadcasters are ready to go. Why aren't we playing? Well, the officials aren't here yet.
Right.
Nobody likes the officials until they're not at the game and you can't play the game.
Well, I umpired high school baseball for 15 years, and I worked for the state. And I had so many years in with the state, I'd leave an hour early. And I tried to work games closer to my home so I wouldn't work in games in Springfield, have an hour drive home. I'd work in Carlinville or Raymond or wherever. And but it's so hard for guys that's got a factory job or whatever. They got to work till 5 o'clock. They can't take off to go umpire a baseball game. We've been saying it for a few years, but I'm telling you, in about 5 years, the IHSA is going to be in a world of trouble.
It's going to be a big problem, and this is not going
to
be...
Already football, talking about maybe having to play on Saturday to get crews.
Right, and we've been beating this drum here at WSMI for a long time, so it's not going to be a situation where people can say, well, I didn't know that was a problem, because... The flag has been raised. The alarm has been sounded.
Oh, yeah.
I was the youngest official in the area 18 years ago, and I would venture to say I'm probably still, if not the youngest, one of the youngest 18 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's a big problem.
That's a problem.
A problem because I don't know what you said. Probably you were younger than 95% of the officials. That might be low. Mm-hmm. It might actually be higher than 95%.
Well, Tim, if you think about it, we go do the varsity game, and we get there by halftime of the JV game. There's no young kids doing the JV game.
Which, that's how it used to be.
Yes. It used to be young. You started at JV, but there was a young kid starting out. Now, the JV officials are officials in their 50s, maybe 60s. They don't want to do varsity games, and they're fine with they go do the JV game, and they're home by 7:45.
Right.
And they're making about $15 less than what the varsity official, and they don't have the scrutiny. Every JV official that we go work behind at a varsity game is a guy my age but doesn't want to work varsity. There is no young ones.
And eventually that is a problem that is going to come right to the front, and everyone's going to be like, well, what do we do now? I don't know. What the answer will be.
I mean, I think in the last year or two, IHSA and then now our administration is trying to do some things in our preseason meetings with our parents about being positive in their role. And I know currently our administration is looking at, you know, like, I don't want to say punishing them, but, you know, keeping them out of events if they're, you know, can't behave.
It shouldn't be a hard thing to go to a ball game and just sit there and enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, there's emotion when, you know, with your kids, you know, Jeremy always tells me this summer, you know, keep your mouth shut. But that's the coaching part of me that's hard to do. But there's emotion with your kids, and you want your kids to do best and whatever. But, you know, somewhere you hope that that for the love of the game and just being able to watch kids and let that occur and let the coaches handle, you know, their part of it. It's hard sometimes, but I think that some of the administration is our administration is doing a good job of, you know, like trying to have that conversation with parents. Here's our expectations for you as a fan, you know, which in turn will help us, you know, a little bit too. And I think as you get into coaching a little bit longer, at first you're, you know, you don't want to have that conversation with a parent, but you know, the more comfortable you get, like, hey, let the kids play, you know, and let us do our job because. you know, even though you may not think so at times, we do.
You know what you're doing.
Yes, and we probably, I read an article just the other day, you know, we are harder on ourselves than anybody else can be. We second guess ourselves as well. You know, hindsight's 20/20. It's, you know, if I knew that was going to happen, of course you wouldn't have done that. But, you know, just let the kids play and let us figure it out and respect the process. I think Jeremy and I talk about all the time, you know, like with the kids, learn the process and just respect the process that we're going to, you know, do our best to get you through and teach you some things about the game and life and, you know, and then let them parent, you know, when they're home.
Yeah, you parent, I'll coach, the officials will officiate, and everything will run a lot smoother. Unfortunately, we live in the real world, and we know that's not going to necessarily happen. But yeah. As an official, the worst thing an official can have is the old rabbit ears. Because, my gosh, people are they're going to yell stuff. And from my experience, usually the loudest person in the gym is the most ignorant. The stuff they are yelling, it's not even right. They're hollering about a rule. That's not the rule.
They're either sitting in the front row or standing on the inline.
Yeah.
You want to tell them, if you want to yell at us, go sit up top and just blend in. You know, we'll still hear you, but I won't be able to pick you out.
Right. And it's got to be hard as an official. You're going to hear the stuff. But to not turn your head and, I guess, acknowledge some of the stuff. Because that's then where you can really get into a back and forth. And as the official, you're in a no-win situation. You can't be standing there arguing with the fan in the stands because you got a job to do.
Right. You know, some of us are better at getting in and out of those situations.
Yes. That's a skill.
We always say Rick can get out of... Or not get out of, but he'll sit there and talk with the coach for 10 minutes and it's like, let's go, come on. But he's good at talking with them, I guess.
Well, this will be my 32nd year. I've never tossed a fan. I'm not going to.
Yeah.
But with experience, you don't have the rabbit ears. You shouldn't. Mm-hmm. Like, at halftime, we'll go in, you hear that guy in the... I said, I hear somebody hollering, but I didn't tell who it was. It don't matter. And, you know, but sometimes on a timeout, you do know that guy in the front row is being an idiot. You can stare, you know, I'm standing there on timeout, and I'm staring him down. And then it's his wife's giving him the old elbow treatment, you know.
Right.
And most of the time, that'll take care of it. You don't have to, you know. But, you know, if the parents would just let him play. They're in Montgomery, McCoupin. I can't remember any MLB or NBA players coming. Little Johnny is not going to be in it. You know, go let him play.
You got Izzy from Brighton.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean,
about Izzy. But I know what your point. Your point is correct.
And Detmer's.
He's on his way.
He's on his way.
On his way.
But I mean, let him play.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll be fine. You know, and if they get to go play college or something a little bit, okay. But it's the worst part of officiating now is the parents and society that's, you know, little Johnny's not, you know, he can't start for us. He's not going to go play MLB ball. You know what I'm saying?
He's not going to Duke.
No.
I hate to tell you.
Yeah.
Rick Toll told me a funny story last year about when he was younger.
Rick told a story.
I know it's shocking.
It's hard to believe.
I know it is. But he was working with Rich Stewart, our buddy Stewie. And I guess there was a coach. He didn't tell me the coach's name. But he was just chewing Stewie. And if you know Stewie, he's got the personality made for it. He'll give it right back to you. So this coach just on it, giving it to him. And Stewie finally walks over to him calmly and says, "Coach, this is my good stuff.
Yeah.
You should see me on a bad night. This is the best I got.
This is it."
You know, and a lot of times, humor can diffuse a situation.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sometimes it sets the coach off, but most of the time, and you do it under, you know, like I got my back to him, but yet I'm, you know, and then you go on your way, and the coach is like, oh, okay, you know.
Yeah, that coach is, I guess, you just turn around and sat down. What do you say?
That's
good stuff. All right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Got no response to that.
We respect an official that, you know, sort of sets a tone and doesn't, you know, make an obstacle of it. Just is there to officiate the game. And sometimes there are ones that are better than others at taking the emotion out of it and being like, I got this, coach. You know, it's okay.
Right.
You know, because you do get excited. We're competitive by nature, and, you know, sometimes we get a little hot, and it happens to the best of us. But I think, yeah, the good ones do kind of diffuse that situation with the humor or just taking control of the game and making it
Well, I think, you know, certain officials, you know, the game's not about us officials.
Right.
It's about those kids. If I walk out of a game after being referee and nobody goes, you know, and the next day, they didn't know.
Who was there?
Yeah, who refereed the game? I did a good job.
That's right.
If they remember, then I must have did something. You know, they didn't like what I did.
I've always said, if both coaches and both fan bases are mad at you, you did a good job. We need to get to a break here on Sports Saturday. We're back in a moment.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize.
David Jenkins, thank you so much here with Dan, Jeremy, and Michelle Smith on Sports Saturday. I've had a wonderful hour with them. And, Michelle, I want to talk briefly about you're taking over the junior high program now, the junior high softball program at Gillespie, just in its early stages of existence. But that was one of the big changes for, I think, girls' sports, specifically basketball in mind, is when the junior high program starting to get implemented, you really saw it move up to the high school level with the skill development, those types of things. And the programs where the junior high coach is the same as the high school coach, there seems to be a difference. It's a great advantage to be able to get these kids under your wing at the early ages.
Yeah, we're hoping to see that. Obviously, this last year was the first year for the program. It's a parent-funded program. So myself and Kelsey Reinhart, which Matisa, as you say,
yes.
It's always Kelsey Matisa, and Jim Matisa are helping me with the middle school season, and we had a good season last year. It's nice for us because we get to see what's coming up for high school, so it allows you to, you know, sort of plan ahead, per se, work on positions that you need to improve on. But it also, most importantly, gets them used to us, and so that's what we're hoping for, is that, you know, Gillespie softball, the way we handle things, mm-hmm. is understood from that 6th, 7th, 8th grade level, wherever they start in at with us, and now we have them for 6 years instead of four. We feel like at the high school, you know, by the time they start out as freshmen, and sometimes by the time they're juniors, they're finally getting it, and when they are seniors, now they're kicking, and then they're gone, and so it goes by really fast. And once you start season, you don't have a ton of practice time with kids, so you're really trying to teach them those things during, you know, throughout a quick season with 35 games maybe. So now we're hoping that, you know, that does allow us to develop those skills at an earlier age and sort of maybe give us that final push to get past that sectional game. So
yeah, it's kind of been your bugaboo.
Yeah, it's been my crutch
as
or whatever,
of late.
Monkey on my back or whatever Jeremy calls it.
Some schools are just, for whatever reason, small towns, churn out certain types of athletes. You know, like Crawfordville has speed. For a long time, Greenville baseball had power, all sorts of power. And now for a long time, Gillespie softball has had high-level pitching. And it's just one of those things. There's really no explanation for it, but it's just kind of been the case at Gillespie. I mean, going all the way back to Corey Allen, all the way through Kelsey Matisa, and then to Addie Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's been consistent for you. And I believe Jim told me this last spring that apparently you got a good one coming.
Yeah, Emma Gibson's, you know, going to be in eighth grade this year, and she's, you know, for her age, you know, last year as a seventh grader was, you know, pretty dominant. You never know, you know. I mean, I hope great things for Emma. I know she works really hard at it, and you know, we have a freshman coming in that's been pitching for a long time too, Megan, and she works hard at it as well. You know, pitching is a huge time commitment, and not all kids want to do it, so we've been very fortunate that we've had great pitching. It makes our jobs a lot easier, but it is a big time commitment, so that the fact that these kids are taking that much time and trying to improve themselves from a seventh grade on, you know, or even before that, really, you know, most kids are starting at an 8U, 10U softball level. Pitching pretty consistently and going to lessons and spending a lot of time with their dad on a bucket and money. Yeah, we're seeing that a little bit.
Always takes money.
Yeah.
Makes the world go around.
So, but yeah, I think she's, you know, we'll see what happens. I hate to, you know, you hate to say, but,
right.
But she works very hard at it. So if, you know, determination is a factor, then that's, you know, that's going to be a key one too. And, you know, same with Sydney and Byers, and she's was only a sophomore this year, and
very
I know her and
you.
Her dad spend a ton of time, you know, working at it. So that's, you know, that's half the battle.
And one thing you don't have to worry about, but Jeremy does, his pitch counts.
Yes.
You know, in softball, you just roll him out and let him go. But, Jeremy, we've been a couple years now into the pitch counts for high school baseball, and I remember this several years ago before this rule was implemented, regional game at Gillespie. Dupo was playing, and there was a gentleman up in the press box who was keeping track of pitches just for his own, and the kid for Dupo threw like 170 pitches. I mean, it was an astronomical number, and I remember thinking at the time, that's criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't have a kid, a high school kid, throwing that many pitches. So now that this rule's been in effect for a couple of years, kind of talk about from your perspective the evolution of it, how you handled it the first year with it being a new thing, as opposed to now where, okay, this is just how we do it.
Yeah, Michelle always kids with me. I kid with her that she doesn't get it. You know, there's numerous times of me and Dad and Tom and Tim Wargo are sitting there trying to figure out, okay, do we take him out now and let him pitch again in 2 days or 3 days? Or we're trying to figure out who we're throwing tomorrow because we used X, Y, and Z to get through this game.
And high school, we got 5 games scheduled this week.
No, well, naturally,
Monday through Saturday. And then one of them's conference game. Oh, we're playing Greenville. We want to throw our number one on Thursday or Friday. And, oh, no, now we're rained out. Or, you know, so now our number one hasn't pitched, you know.
So it's a juggling act.
It really is. It's, I mean, the charts and trying to figure out, you know, what to do, how to do it. And like he said, you want to throw your best
right.
in the conference games, but that's not always possible. And like, it's not so much the pitch count per se, because we never let our kids go more than 100, 105, 110 anyway.
Days of rest.
It's days of rest. You know, pitching on a Monday and then coming back on a Friday are no longer possible
mm-hmm.
because of the days of rest.
Right.
And if there's one thing I think they need to look at is that whole days of rest, because even the majors are throwing on a Monday and then throwing a bullpen of by Wednesday, Thursday, at least Friday,
mm-hmm.
you know. So the Monday-Friday concept,
I think for me, for him, I was, you know, surprised by the fact that you're in a playoff situation. And you might get to throw your number one for a semifinal game and not have him for the championship game. And that's,
right.
you know, that
she's right.
You
got to
have a pitching staff of, you know, in high school, they got to have a huge pitching staff. And that's hard to do.
But if you're going to beat a T-Town or a Plains at some point, you're going to have more than one good pitcher.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's what, you know, there's talk about, well, that's a whole nother story. But a good team's going to have at least two, probably three good pitchers, you know. So one pitcher is not going to take you through a postseason.
No. And you know how it goes. If you decide, I'm going to save my number one for the championship game, guess what happens? You don't play the championship game when they're well-rested for next year.
That don't
year.
Work.
Yeah, never.
Yeah.
You know, a couple years ago when we went to state for middle school, you know, there was talk, do we want to save our ace for the semifinals? I'm like, I just want to bring home – my number one goal is bringing home a trophy for
right.
these guys.
Right.
So we're going to throw our ace, and if we take home fourth instead of second or first, it is what it is,
yeah,
I guess.
You can't worry about tomorrow today. You just got to win the game in front of you today and then
right.
deal
right.
with everything else you have to deal with. Guys, we have a couple minutes left in the show. I want to jump back to officiating real fast, and we're talking about, you know, sometimes fans not necessarily knowing the rules. I think the two biggest things in basketball, they get confused, and I would like you, Dan and Jeremy, to explain this. What is over and back, and what is over the back? Because just because a kid who's 6 inches taller jumps up over the back of a kid and gets the rebound, that's not over the back, necessarily.
It's on the back, I call it, but you're right. The big boy from Nokomis,
Sobble.
He's gonna get that rebound, and they're wanting coaches wanting over the back, and I'm looking through. There's this space between. You can see the body. He's taller.
He's
6'8" against a 6'2" kid. You know that, and that's nothing. You know, and fans don't understand it. You know, they think it's a foul every time.
Every time,
and it's not.
And then over in the back, what ball and man have to be across the timeline?
There's got to be 3 points. We say 3 points across, 2 feet and the ball. So.
And if it's 2 points, It's not over and back.
He could literally straddle half court and go pivot around,
right,
and it not be over and back.
There you go. So, Dan, Jeremy, Michelle, thank you so much for coming in this morning. The hour flew by a lot like your summer vacation has.
Yes, way too fast.
This is your 50,000-watt sports voice of Mid-Illinois, WQSMI, FM, Litchfield, Hillsboro, Carthenville, and Greenville. Next week, we will rebroadcast Terry Totes Carl, the 2006 Hillsboro Class A State Championship.